My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Hope your Friday is going well so far. It's Mike Elam sitting in for Annie Fry today. I'm here today. I am back on Monday. And today I have everybody else who's here. Mr. Wiggins is here. Brad is here. Annie's the only one who's not. And then all you guys are going to leave me alone for Columbus Day / Indigenous Peoples and whatever else they're trying to co-opt that holiday into being on Monday.
We are celebrating privately.
Yeah, exactly.
Amongst ourselves.
A little quiet time with the family to do a little reflection on where you are on this issue.
Yeah. What we've always said is Thanksgiving is not enough.
This is true.
We have to celebrate the pilgrims more.
The pilgrims. Exactly.
Which is what we refer to Columbus as a
pilgrim.
That's
what we call Columbus as a pilgrim.
Which is, he was.
Well, there you
but
go.
But he's just not what you typically call the pilgrim.
He's a different pilgrim.
Yes.
And it's a John Wayne pilgrim.
That's right.
going God, a different
it's a great
direction.
Start. It's a great start to the show.
Hey, you know, I have not done this show in forever, it feels like. I don't think I've even been on 97.1 as a guest or anything in probably at least a month. Anything happen while I've been gone?
No.
No. Pretty much same stuff, different day.
Actually, kind of, yeah. There's been a bunch of debates.
Wait, debates?
Yeah, you probably been on since those have been happening.
Who was debating?
Well, the most recent was the vice presidential debate.
Yeah, the VP debate.
Oh, so that election's still going on.
That's right.
Uh-huh, that's still a thing.
I thought we finished that already. No?
We finished, 2024 election 1.0 whenever Joe Biden was forced out.
Oh, that guy. Is he still alive,
by the
way?
But then we started a new one because the Democrats wanted a do-over on their candidate.
That's right. And they went with the lady that no one ever voted for.
Right.
That's right.
Because of democracy.
That, exactly. And is the biggest issue still facing America the threat to democracy? That ever go away, or is that still the thing?
It did go away.
It did go away?
Wait, let me tell you how it went away.
How'd it go away?
So it was a huge issue. Then Democrats elected somebody without voting for them, and they realized it was going to be hard to message on, so it went away.
It went away, but then it started creeping back. And then somebody shot at Trump because he is a threat to democracy, and they hit him in the ear. And then it went
away. Our timeline's a little messy here, but
and then it went away for a little while again. And then somebody tried to shoot at Trump again, but was apprehended before he could get a shot off. And so it's gone away, and now it's starting to kind of creep back again.
It's great that the oldies can come back. You know, it's the music radio days of you have recurrents. Those are things that used to be a hit, and then they went away for a while because you got tired of hearing them because we overplayed it way, 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 way too much. And then it comes back, and you go, oh, yeah, I remember that. That was a really good one. And then you get tired of it quickly again, and it kind of fades away.
And that's what the last month has been. In a sense, you're listening to Billie Eilish's new single. But also, it's sitting on the dock of the bay, which you've heard a billion times. So
there you go.
You know, it's kind of playing the hits.
A little Otis Redding coming back. Then a little nostalgia for things, and then it goes away. It's funny. Did you guys watch the whole Saturday Night Live clip with Kamala Harris?
Watched several of these.
Yeah, there's a few of them.
Yeah. So it's funny kind of watching that as to how they're starting to play with her a little bit. Those hard-hitting interviews that she's been doing on those hardcore news outlets like The View.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, you did have 60 Minutes, which did an interview with her. And then I guess from everything that I'm taking from that, they decided to pick and choose how they were going to put the interview together. And I'm going to ask you this question. And I didn't really like that answer. But I ask you another question down the road. I like that answer better for the first question that I ask you. So I'm going to move that one and put that one up here and make you look like you're not crazy.
Okay.
as crazy.
Tell me where you're hearing that, because we have interviewed people about this, but I want to know where you heard that.
On Fox News.
Okay. So I didn't know Fox News was talking about
so
this.
So Fox News was talking about the fact that... I don't even know if we have the audio from that, from what they did, but he asked her the question, and Fox News has been playing the crap out of it. So they ask her a question of basically of where are you with Israel? And Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't seem to be listening. Was how he, Bill Whitaker, did the interview, I believe, from 60 Minutes. And he laid that out there. And she went on her normal Kamala unhinged, doesn't really make sense, word salad answer. And then he asked her another question, but I don't know what the other question was. And the answer that she gave, still not awesome, but not so unhinged. And they took that answer and they put it as the answer in the interview that they played on 60 Minutes. The problem for her is, in the trailer leading up to the interview, they used her original answer. So the conspiracy theory, if you will, and probably what happened, to be honest, is when they played the trailer, the Harris campaign must have reached out to CBS and went, hey, can we not run that one? Because she looks, you know, BS crazy at that point. So can you help us on that one a little bit? And they went, yeah.
Yeah, the journalist said, okay.
Exactly. Remember, this is the same news organization, and I would put that in air quotes, news organization with CBS, who is chastising their own reporter for actually pushing back on another story that they did, where he pushed back on them, and just to get what would be CBS's version of a fair and balanced interview. They had a call that Brian Kilmeade, I believe, played it and played the audio from it. No. Mark Reardon. Reardon played the audio from it of a call that CBS News did with all of their reporters in talking about, you know, unfortunately, one of our own has veered and is not holding up journalist's integrity. And I was like, wait, what? And then their legal, I don't know if it was not a legal reporter, but their legal rep who was on the call pushed back on the management and said, wait. He didn't do anything wrong. He just clarified a point and pushed back to say, well, the other side is saying this. How would you answer that? And
wait, so clarify who is on this call. So who were they calling out?
So the reporter they were calling out. So it was like a CBS Mornings thing, and it was Ta-Nehisi Coates was the author.
Correct.
And he was very, very sympathetic in his new book, like basically calling Israel genocidal in his new book. And the reporter, which I can't think of his name right now, he pushed back and basically had what would be considered a normal adversarial interview from the press with this author. And really, the author didn't have good answers for
No, not at all.
The author came off looking petty and bad on this.
I want to say it was Steve Coates, but I could be wrong about
I'll look it up.
I'm not a big CBS News person, so I'm a little lost on who their reporters are.
I'm so not a big CBS person that I didn't even know this entire thing existed.
It's become a whole thing internally for them, because journalistically, if you look at our big, you know, CBS, NBC, ABC, you see what they have become as news organizations, and they are complete just frauds of actually doing journalism. We just don't do that anymore.
Okay, I don't know if I can pronounce his name, but the host that asked the questions was Tony DeCopoli?
That's right.
DeCopoli?
Yes. Tony DeCopoli, I believe, is the guy who did that. So he's the one who was doing the interview and asking the questions. It all goes back to the bigger problem that we have as people who are trying to be informed. And let's be honest, if you're listening to 97.1, you're into all this inside baseball stuff, right? And I feel bad talking about some of the things that we're going to talk about later on today, because it's kind of preaching to the choir, as we used to say in the Southern Baptist Church, right? You're already here. I don't really need to tell you about the gospel, because you wouldn't be here every Sunday if you didn't believe in it already. If you're listening to this station, you already understand that a lot of these other news sources are just feeding you one side of the story, and they are trying to do it over and over and over again, because we all know from advertising, frequency sells. If I tell you something enough over and over and over and over again, eventually you start to believe it. So
under the banner of unbiased news,
exactly,
which is the big problem.
And that's kind of where we end up with that stuff. A guy who doesn't have unbiased news is Ryan Smells, and we're going to talk to him in a little bit. We're going to talk about the fact that Fox is still pitching a debate. I know Trump has said before, it is too late, we're already voting. Harris kind of acted like she wanted to do another debate, but she's not on board with the Fox News people. She's like, no, I want to keep with my people, who we just talked about, are there to protect her and make sure that she doesn't look crazy. Which, they're doing a poor job, because the more that she does interviews, the more it's bleeding through, and people are able to see, hey. Remember why she dropped out before any votes in 2020? Yeah, now you're remembering, because there is absolutely no substance there whatsoever. We want to know, though, on the YouTube live chat poll, what would your answer be to today's poll? The poll is, what is the most likely result of the presidential election? And we're going to give you four choices. Brad went all out on covering everything here, right? So your first choice is Kamala wins the popular vote and the Electoral College. Number two, Trump wins the popular vote and the Electoral College. Number three, Kamala wins the popular, Trump wins the Electoral College. Or number four, Trump wins the popular, Kamala wins the electoral. So there are your four choices. We would love to get your opinion on that, so you can log on and check that out. I love the fact of this show, better than any other show that I get the opportunity to be a part of, has such a fantastic interactive audience here.
Yeah.
You guys have done a great job of interacting. Is it fannies? Is that what we're calling that?
Well, they call themselves all sorts of things. There's the fannies, the fanny pack.
The friars.
I got called out by a lady last time I did this show, so I still have a little PTSD, because I said something wrong, and she's like, we're fannies, damn it, blah, 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 get it right. I'm like, sorry about that. And Lori, I don't know where Annie is. I just know she ain't here. I didn't ask a lot of questions when Steve said, can you work for Annie? I said, you still want me? God love you. Yes, I would love the opportunity to come play on 97.1. After all, this is the conservative voice in St. Louis. So it's good to be a part of the team. It's good to see you guys again. We haven't chatted in a while. I see you every now and then when I pop through the building, when, you know, they drop the restraining order and I'm allowed to make it downtown.
Yeah.
You know, when you live in St. Charles, they don't always want you to come downtown. I get to come down once a month for the East-West Gateway Council of Governments, which, by the way, they're doing their crime summit follow-up today. Steve Ellman and I were talking yesterday, and he said, yeah, I got to be downtown for the crime summit stuff. I'm like, oh, the one that Tashara and Sam Page are leading as the chairman of the crime summit problem. Think about this. You have East-West Gateway that has put together a crime summit task force to try to combat crime in St. Louis metro area, the majority of that crime being downtown. The two people who they vote to make the chair people are the mayor of St. Louis and the county executive of St. Louis County. By the way, that's where 90% of the homicides occur in the St. Louis metropolitan
area.
So
you're saying they're going to own up to it?
That would be CBS reporting
There's a big problem. They're going to say, yes, we're at the center of it. That's what you're saying is going to happen?
So Ellman made a motion at an East-West Gateway meeting where he said, I think we need to at least have a representative from the Missouri side and a representative from the Illinois side, who are the chair people of this committee, just an attempt to keep it fair for the region, right? And Tashara said, well, Sam and I are the closest to the problem, so we need to be the ones who are the chair people, which I would come back to the fact and say, if you knew what you were doing and you had good answers for this, I would submit we would need a crime task force for East-West Gateway to do. Which, by the way, East-West Gateway, generally, transportation. It's generally what East-West Gateway does. They handle all the transportation funding from the federal government that comes to the St. Louis metropolitan area. Now, they do some other things, too, and it's a fantastic group of people overall. The entire metro area is represented here, and there's a lot of really good people that are members of East-West Gateway, so I don't want to shatter that. I just thought it was funny when I'm like, oh, really? Okay. So we're going to put the fox in charge of the hen house. We'll see how this goes.
It seems as if, not to get too deep on this here, but it seems as if they knew, and it sounds like they do know where the majority of the problem is.
They do.
That they could solve it really without any of these other people's involvement, therefore negating the need for the entire summit.
I would tell you, in talking with some St. Louis City police officers that I've gotten the opportunity to know, that if the city of St. Louis would just take the gloves and the restraints off of the police officers downtown, and their contention is, not mine, their contention is, give us a month to go solve the problems that we know are happening, we will fix this in a month. St. Louis City police officers, now these are rank and file people, these aren't the head honchos. These are people that are on the streets running down the bad guys on a regular basis. They said, if you'll take the gloves off of us and let us go do our job like we need to do our job, we can fix this in a month. If you did that, it would change everything for the St. Louis metro area.
Well, pardon me, but I tend to trust the politicians more.
and why wouldn't you? I mean, they've had such a great track record to this point. Hey, my name is Mike Elam. I am sitting in for Annie Fry today. The rest of the crew is all here. We are going to talk with Ryan Smells on the other side from Fox News Radio from Capitol Hill. Can't wait to hear what he's got to say to this. And so excited that I get to be here and chatting with you for the next 3 hours on 97.1 FM Talk.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be. Favorite song.
It's the Annie Fry Show on 97.1 FM Talk. My name is Mike Elam. Just if you didn't hear, we were looking for your YouTube live chat poll of today. What is the most likely result of the presidential election? Kamala Harris wins the popular and the electoral college. Trump wins the popular and electoral college. Kamala Harris wins the popular. Trump wins the electoral. Or Trump wins the popular and Kamala wins the electoral. So you can get your votes in on that and let us know, what do you think the answer of that is going to be? I'm starting to feel a whole lot better about this election. I was getting worried there for a while because it just felt like the Democrats were going to do what they did with Joe Biden, and they were going to hide her out in this case, like they did with Joe in 2000, where Joe didn't really have to answer any questions. He got soft interviews everywhere, and he really didn't have to do anything. The problem is Kamala can't even do the soft interviews. When she goes out and does the soft interviews, she still comes off as someone who has absolutely no substance.
I don't understand. I forget who our guest was that we had on earlier this week, but they were talking about how she was, it's Tim Murtaugh from the Trump campaign.
Okay.
So he was on and he was talking about how they asked her what she would do differently than the Biden administration. And she got like three different shots at answering that question.
She did.
And she never answered it outside of saying, I think on The View, she was like, I don't think that there's anything that I would change. And they're like, let's try that again. And they went on to Colbert. And she kind of gave a word solid answer, and it was pretty much, no, we've had a lot of success. It's really interesting to watch her campaign, because what she's trying to do is run this campaign where she's both in charge and not in charge.
Exactly.
So she's trying to be like, hey, I'm running with the force of having been the vice president, but also I'm not responsible for any of the bad things that have happened under this administration.
I want to take full ownership of all the good stuff.
Right.
And I want to distance myself from all the bad stuff.
Yeah. And like on interviews, she's like, I'm the last person in the room. You know, like even you go back as far as, 2022, somebody asked her about the Afghanistan withdrawal, and she's like, yeah, I feel good about that. I was the last person in the room on that. And you can't do that if you are trying to, she's both trying to separate herself and not separate herself from Joe Biden's campaign and his presidency, and it's just not working. And what's really interesting to me too is every time she tries to get that separation going, Joe Biden comes in and he's like, hey, we're singing from the same song sheet here.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey kid, you've been there with me the whole time. We've been in lockstep doing this whole thing together. And she's like, yeah, Joe, go take a nap.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you have some more milk and go away?
The thing about it that's so interesting to me is the reason she's trying to tap dance, it would seem, is that she doesn't have anything to offer of her own accord. So
no.
She does need some sort of legitimacy from having been the vice presidency. But it's been such an abject failure and disaster that she's like, I don't want to get too close to that because that's what everybody hated about Joe Biden.
I keep waiting, even for these softball interviews, for... Because you would think her team is prepping her. And I don't know if she just doesn't get the prep or she doesn't understand the answers or where she's at on this stuff. But I keep waiting for them to say, hey, you were part of this stuff with Joe and you can take credit on whatever you think was good, which I don't really see there. But let's just say you take credit for whatever you think has been a success to this point. But on the other side, where you say, on day one, I'm going to do this, I'm waiting for one of them to say, so is the administration, like Joe, keeping you from implementing that policy right now? Because J.D. Vance did a great job during the vice presidential debate of coming back to the fact of, hey, your first day was 1,300 days ago, mm-hmm. right? You've been there for this whole time. That whole thing of, I'm the last person in the room. Well, I'm starting to understand the reason you were the last person in the room is because you were still sitting there trying to figure out what the hell's going on. So I'm sitting there trying to sort through what just happened, and everybody else finishes the meeting and walks out, and she's still sitting there with this perplexed look on her face trying to go, what the hell just happened? Did we do something? Should I have done something? I should probably go say something. No, maybe I shouldn't say something. She has no idea what is going on. And the more that they give her room, the worse her answers become. Because she just has zero substance of where she's going to go with any of this. And I found it funny that she was making fun of Trump when Trump was talking about during their debate that they have a plan in process.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, what? You don't have a plan? Like, you know, if you're going to get the stuff through Congress to where it's actually going to stick, you're not going to have a plan that's going to be fully vetted right now.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, like, on that question specifically is if you say you have a plan and this is what my plan is going to be and this is what we're going to do, that's not a plan. That's a campaign promise.
It is.
And so you do, like you were saying, you have to get that through Congress, you have to get that through the Senate, and then you have to sign it into law. I think that she was pressed on this a little bit by 60 Minutes where they were like, hey, so how are you going to get this funded?
Right.
And she didn't have anything for him on
it. No, because you can't fund that.
The developing a plan is part of the process-solving process, for lack of a better term. You look at a problem, you say, okay, what are some things that we can do? And then, you know, especially if you're like in a group, you start brainstorming and everybody has these ideas and you start playing these plans out. So you start developing a plan. Being in the midst of a development of a plan is not a negative thing. It's proactive. The man's not president yet.
Right. Well, if you listen to Tim Walz and do his big line now is, well, I'm a former football coach, and as a football coach, if you put a playbook together, you're darn sure going to run those plays. And
no,
I'm
you're
like,
not.
I would tell you right now, it depends on what's the other team look like. And the other team in this case, I'm referring to the legislative branch.
Mm-hmm.
What's the House going to look like? What's the Senate going to look like? I feel good right now, moving forward as we sit here today on the 11th of October, to say, I think Trump's going to win, and he's going to have both houses. And I think the Senate, as we sit here right now, and this is me being a homer, so I get it, right?
We're on that station.
That's true. This is the crowd that we need to talk to. I really think we're going to be looking at 52 Republican senators. I think you're going to have a 52-48 split. And I'm including the independents that are going to caucus with the Democrats. So
52-48, yeah.
I think that's where we're going to be. The House, I don't know what that number is going to look like, but I think they're going to keep the House. I don't know if they're going to keep it long term. But I think they're going to have at least a couple of years. Do we have Ryan on the line? Well,
looks like we got him now.
Ryan Smells, how are you, sir?
Well, hold on. Let me put him on.
Oh, hey. Sorry about that. Ryan, how
can you
are
hear
you,
me?
Sir?
There
yes.
We go.
Fantastic.
Hey, happy Friday.
Hey, happy Friday. It's Mike and Brad from the Annie Fry Show on 97.1 FM Talk. We appreciate you making some time for us today. Sorry we were having a little trouble in connecting there. How's things in your world today at Fox News Radio?
Oh, good. Just finished up a podcast recording/segment that I'm doing with Chad Pergam that'll air tomorrow on hurricane relief and what a relief package may look like. So lots of moving parts here.
It seems like I've been following a lot of that hurricane relief that's going on. Man, the stories just keep getting worse because the flooding is still going on down there. And I saw they're doing even more water rescues right now because the rivers are now overflowing.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of problems. My parents actually live in Fort Myers. They were able to be safe, and they didn't get any major damage, fortunately. But if we want to have a positive thing that came out of this, one of our Fox affiliate hosts, Mark Starling over in Asheville, actually was featured on CBS Evening News for the work that he did with one of his co-hosts, where they actually were pretty much the only line of communication through their AM network. And, you know, they helped, establish help centers, help people get in contact because they weren't able to, call in a certain, cell service was out. So it was a pretty phenomenal thing what they did in terms of stepping up for the people of Asheville and North Carolina and getting people reunited and all that.
That's amazing. That's a great story.
Yeah, I retweeted earlier, so definitely go check it out. It's pretty heroic what they were able to do, and they're not going to take any credit for it, but what they did was awesome.
We're talking with Ryan Smells. He is Fox News Radio, Capitol Hill, and White House correspondent, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit because I'm hearing that Fox News is trying to get a last-minute debate done.
We did, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. Trump put out a statement yesterday saying that he was not going to do it. Actually, one of his justifications was that since Vice President Harris said on The View that she would not do anything differently than President Biden, he thinks that there is no need to have a debate now because she's answered all the questions she needs to. So I don't know. We could debate the truth of that statement, but the reality is that's one of the reasons he's justifying really not having another debate with Vice President Harris, and he is claiming victory for both the first debate as well as the debate between J.D. Vance and Tim Walz.
So we were talking right before you joined us about the fact that Kamala Harris is seeming to try to have everything both ways, where she wants to say, hey, I've got all these new ideas, and day one I'm going to do this. But when she gets asked on shows, those hard-hitting news shows like The View, and they say, what would you do different than Joe Biden? And she's like, really, I can't think of anything. How does she get herself out of that pickle?
It's hard to know. I mean, she's tried to do it through policy and laying out her specific plans, which, in some ways do contrast from President Biden's agenda. And she's kind of tried to do it that way. But at the same time, yes, she's refused to throw President Biden under the bus. And that's kind of one of the big question marks. It's like, okay, well, if President Biden's polling as poorly as he is, but you're trying to find that balance of, separate yourself from President Biden, but, don't completely separate yourself from President Biden because, you want to attach yourself to some of the things from the administration. This is one of the things she struggled with. And, many will argue they've run a pretty solid campaign, up until this point, but this has been one thing they've struggled with. You have a little bit of a setback, maybe not a major one, from the vice presidential debate where J.D. Vance came off very strong. But B, Harris has these moments, and there's a possibility this View, some people believe this View appearance could really be, taken up by the Trump campaign and utilized. And it could be one of those lasting images if they don't win on Election Day. So that was kind of a little bit of a setback where she is, you know, struggling, it looks like, to really find out if she's different from President Biden. But also, you know, she's refused to really aggressively separate herself because she doesn't want to criticize him.
Are you hearing from the Harris campaign as to where they want to go with her on these last this last month of the campaign?
Well, we've started off in Arizona this week. That's where she's made her latest appearance. It looks like, you know, Nevada, I think, is going to be the next stop for the Harris campaign. But, you know, based off the Fox News polling that we have, you know, we've got a number of battleground states that are still up as rated as toss-ups. And it's a lot of the ones you'd expect. But, you know, when we did our individual polling of Arizona, you know, Harris is doing very well in that state. And, you know, there's a possibility she could be the winner. And that was a state that was supposed to be a shoe-in for Republicans years ago. So there's a benefit to putting extra time in Arizona because, you know, there's also a Senate race there where Democrats are actually polling very well in. And Democrats feel that, you know, if they're able to pull that off, you get a double whammy. You get the presidency in that race, and you also get you keep that seat blue for the Democrats. But if they're going to be specifically staying there more than other states, I'm not quite sure. I think Pennsylvania has become kind of the one, you know, maybe like the new Ohio, where we expect a lot of campaigning there because it's kind of viewed as maybe the biggest state now and the most important state because Ohio is kind of trended red, as has Florida. But I would expect, you know, Pennsylvania, Michigan to be big spots for them. But then, I don't know if they're going to really prioritize Georgia and Arizona as well. But I think those would probably be the big four I would expect to see a lot of time spent in, as well as Wisconsin. That's one other thing to add. They're doing their blue wall bus tour, which means the blue wall, a lot of Midwest. So expect over the next week or so, a lot of campaigning in Wisconsin as well as Michigan.
How much, if any, do you think these Senate races are going to bleed into the presidential races in those swing states?
Well, I think somebody pointed out recently that there has not been a Senate race where, in a long time, maybe there's been one, where the state goes the opposite direction of how they vote in the Senate. So Susan Collins is probably, I believe, the only recent example where a Republican won a statewide election for the Senate, and then the presidency went for somebody else. So, you know, it seems like the Senate race could bleed over in Montana, where you know, former President Trump is expected to win by a pretty hefty margin. And you've seen the polling kind of separate from John Tester in that state, where this is probably Republicans' best chance of flipping the Senate completely and getting to 51 instead of having to worry about a 50-50 tie. And I also think, you know, the one that I think is going to be the most interesting will be Ohio. Because former President Trump is polling very well in that state. He's expected to win by a decent margin. Could be tight. We'll see. But Sherrod Brown looks like he has the polling advantage. We have it rated as a toss-up, but, you know, Sherrod Brown maybe might be a slight favorite right now. I think that's the one where you're going to see a major implication of, you know, does the presidential race bleed over into a Senate race? And that's kind of what we have to wait and see.
I'm curious. I think West Virginia, everybody pretty well assumes, is going to go Republican.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a flip seat. Montana,
Yeah. It
looks like, could very well be a flip seat. Is that Yeah. What gets you to 51, or does that get you to 52?
Yeah, that's the easiest way to get to 51.
To 51.
So West Virginia likely to flip already. I mean, it's almost a done deal from what it looks like. That'll be 50-50. Then if Montana flips, and just judging by all the polling you see out there, this is Republicans' second best chance at a guaranteed flip, which is to go for Montana. So that would make it 51 to 49. And then there's a couple other ones that Republicans are doing decent in terms of polling. It would probably be, you know, Ohio would be the next best chance at a flip. And then you're probably looking at maybe Pennsylvania or Wisconsin for the best chances after that.
For everything that I've heard so far, the reach seems to be 53. That's about all that they think they're going to be able to get to as a reach. 51 seems to be the number, like you're talking about, how they think they're going to get there. A lot of people that I'm hearing from think 52 is going to be that number. And from everything that I've kind of heard, that seems to be the big thing that people want to hold on to. They've got to win the Senate, because the Senate is going to be the stopgap. Even if Trump doesn't win, it's going to stop a lot of stuff that could really come back to hurt them. But what are you hearing about the House?
Well, the reality is, and one more thing on the Senate first, and that's that the one thing that's holding Republicans back here, it seems to be fundraising and candidate quality. There are a couple of states where they did not get maybe the ideal A-plus candidate they wanted. Wisconsin, I think, is a good example where Mike Gallagher chose not to run. And just fundraising has been a huge issue for Republicans. It has held a lot of them back from being able to travel the entire state in certain cases, and that's been a huge burden. Nevada, Sam Brown, that's a good example of that. Now, getting to the House, this is so complicated because this could really go any way, and there's so many little factors that play into the House. And I think, you know, when you talk to operatives in both parties and they say, oh, we're confident, you know, they're always going to say that. But then sometimes you can tell when they're kind of misleading, or they're just trying to, it's fake optimism. But, you know, both sides here, they've got reason to be optimistic. And it is a fascinating House map. I think the one thing I would point out, if we're going to look at the Midwest and if there's any indication, the one thing that might have Republicans worried about how the House could go is that you have Iowa, a state that has been trending red. Republicans have won big in multiple statewide elections over multiple election cycles. The two House candidates there in swing districts did very well in 2022. You know, you have Marionette Miller Meeks. She won her seat in 2020 by 6 votes, and then she won by a pretty hefty margin in 22. Well, now you've got two seats there. One's lean R, the other's been moved from likely R to a toss-up.
Mm.
And, you know, Democrats probably weren't expecting to be competitive there, but now it's very competitive for Democrats, and that's a good sign. And then, you know, New York was probably going to be the state that we were all watching for on election night, because there are about 5 or 6 competitive seats there. Well, you know, one big issue, you have a Republican in that state who is now facing Anthony D'Esposito. He's facing accusations that he put his mistress on his congressional payroll. And so he could have a huge ethics case that might, you know, put his race in jeopardy. And you've got a number of other J's. I mean, you've got Republicans who are defending pretty blue areas or very toss-up areas. So it's just a very competitive state, and it could be the indication of where the night's going to go. But one more thing on the House I want to point out is that you have a number of Democrats who were defending House seats that we thought were likely going to go blue and that they were going to have a pretty easy time cruising the reelection. Well, those members decided to run for bigger seats in the Senate. You know, Alyssa Slotkin in Michigan, Abigail Spanberger in Virginia is running for governor. Then you have Katie Porter in California, who ran for Senate and lost, and David Trone in Maryland, who gave up his seat because he decided to run for Senate and ultimately lost. Those seats went from being likely Democrat ones to now very competitive seats. So it's kind of like that's the thing where the little things like that are contributing to whether or not Republicans are going to be able to hold on to the House or ultimately lose it.
You know, the good news for you is you've got great job security going on right now, man. There is so much to keep tabs on, and we appreciate you doing that. And if you're good with it, we'd love to check back with you over the course of the next month and just keep tabs on what's going on.
Oh, I would love that. I love coming on this show, and no matter who hosts it, it's always a great time and always a lot of fun.
Well, Ryan, we appreciate your time this time. Hope you have a fantastic weekend.
Hey, same to you, my friend. Thank you.
That is Ryan Smells from Fox News Radio, Capitol Hill and White House correspondent. There is a lot going on, and we are going to play a little fun game on the other side of this. A game that, to be honest with you, I always suck at, and it is the B or not the B. Ryan Wiggins is coming back in with us on Wiggins America. I'm Mike Elam, sitting in for Annie Fry today on 97.1 FM Talk. So I hate to bump Wiggins America back to next hour, but I also don't want to shortchange Wiggins America because it's always one of my favorite things.
Yeah, we've got some good beer not to be today.
I'm looking forward to that because, like I said, I normally suck at this game, but I always learn something and it's fun to play. But we went long with Ryan. Just talking about stuff, but he was talking about where he thinks the Senate's going to end up, and it's looking like the Republicans are going to win the Senate. The question's going to be, is it going to be 51, 52, 53 seats that they own at that point? But it looks like the House is much more in play and looks really competitive in some areas that they didn't expect it to be competitive. Both ways, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like the Democrats are going to end up being competitive in areas like Iowa that he was talking about that they didn't expect. But then it looks like the Republicans are going to end up being competitive in other areas that they didn't expect. And both reasons. Both parties put up candidates that aren't the best candidates. You know, candidate quality is a big deal when you're trying to win seats, especially flip seats. So that's a big deal. So tell me a little bit about this Obama thing.
Okay, so Barack Obama hit the campaign trail for Kamala Harris. And we have this video basically that sums up his speech from last night in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And
far on YouTube, you can see this.
You
right
can watch it. Yeah.
Before you hit play here, just to set this up, he's at a campaign rally.
Campaign rally.
Now, if you're on our YouTube page, you can see this, and it's really funny to watch, which is why we want to do the video.
Yeah.
But if you're just listening to it, this is edited.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is edited.
He didn't just say it over and over again.
This is a supercut. This is a supercut. This is basically a summary of his speech.
This is a CBS News edit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Donald Trump.
I love the pause.
And you don't realize how much he talks with his hands until you see something like that.
And if you're listening on the radio, it turns out to be really good when you just see him with all of these mannerisms that Ryan's talking about, and then the pause and the shaking of the head.
Donald Trump. So that was a pro-Harris speech. About Donald Trump.
It's one of those kind of things where it just feels like all over again. Like 2020, I felt like nobody voted for Joe Biden. There were zero votes for Joe Biden. You were either voting for Donald Trump or against Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And that just felt like where it is. It feels like this is that 2.0.
Yes.
Here we go again.
The question is will it stick? Is that still an effective campaign strategy for the Democrats?
And yeah, because in 2020, you didn't know what you were getting into.
Well, things,
now you know what you got into.
Yeah,
right?
It's like, this is what we did. And things were pretty bad. I mean, there was the pandemic going on, and that's just tough for anybody else. But yeah, I don't know. Is Donald Trump like living by a railroad track at this point where you just get used to the noise?
I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with her to protect her. Because you're at that last point where something's got to happen. She's got to go out. She's got to do something.
She's changing her strategy.
They're changing the strategy because they're seeing the numbers change.
I do, too.
And she's going in the wrong direction. Trump's going in the right direction, which is why I feel optimistic. And I don't know, man. In the words of Jesse Jackson, keep hope alive. You know, we'll see how this plays out. We're going to play to be the B or not to be. On the other side, it's the Addie Fry Show. Mike Elam sitting in for Addie today on 97.1 FM Talk.